Welcome to the Aquarimax Audio Show with Russ and Kelly. We provide information on all kinds of aquarium-related topics.
This is episode 238, recorded February 9th, 2015.
Greetings, Aquarimaxers.
Hello.
It's amazing. We've actually 238 episodes. That's something. I was just thinking about that before the show. It's a lot.
It's a lot. When did we start this?
Well, it must be, let's see. I think we started January of 2008.
So, is that right? So, that's like 7 years? Was it 2008 or 2009? I don't remember.
Anyway, that's a long time.
That's a long time ago.
Yeah, because we were thinking it was coming up on 6 years. So, yeah, it must have been 2009. I don't know. We should go back and listen to the first episode.
Yeah, we really shouldn't.
Anyway. We just very recently had an anniversary of some type.
Probably.
For Aquarimax, because it was January.
And so now it's February.
I think this is our sixth year.
Okay.
Okay.
Did we ever do the thing for Valentine's Day where we, like, spotlight romantic fish, like kissing Grammys and stuff? Did we joked about that before. Did we ever do it?
I don't know.
We should do it sometime.
We should.
Like, things to get your date instead of flowers and chocolate.
Kissing Grammys?
Kissing Grammys. Yeah. I don't know.
Well, we did talk about...
Maybe that would not be a good answer.
We did talk about how somebody recently, I think maybe it was Mick, who was saying how people would tattoo, like, a heart on the side of the kissing Grammy.
Like the tattoos that we saw.
Yeah, and how...
Yeah, don't do that.
We all thought it was tacky.
That's tacky.
And inappropriate for the fish. Not a good
thing. If you already like fish, you could just get kissing Grammys. You don't have to tattoo things on them. That's what cards are for.
Yeah, tattoo on cards?
No, just write.
Oh, okay.
You just, you know, words. You write them with a pen.
Okay.
Or a pencil, I guess, if you can't find a pen. But
okay.
Pencil and a card is a little weird.
Is it?
Yeah.
Okay.
Just... It's like signing your kid's permission slip in pencil.
Okay, I'm not going to do that anymore. Okay. So who do we got lined up this week?
I might end up being one of those nights. Kelly has a headache, which means I'm probably going to say all kinds of weird stuff.
Probably.
Okay, we have Scott. I don't know where Scott is from.
Oh,
you didn't tell me.
I'm not sure because it was from Facebook. I think has told us where he's from before, Facebook. But I forgot. And I feel awful now that I thought I was going to look that up, but I didn't. Let me see if I can find it real quick.
Excuse me. Okay, well, we have Scott.
Oh, probably in Fort Worth, Texas.
Oh, okay.
It's probably that Scott.
That's Scott.
Fort Worth, Texas,
okay.
Yes.
In any case, he was from Facebook.
Yes, but I'm pretty sure it's the Scott in Fort Worth, Texas. If I'm not, please correct me.
And JR from Eastern Kentucky.
Yes.
And Joe from Heartland, Wisconsin.
And Joe, I think this is the first time Joe has contributed. And it's not the first time that JR has contributed, but one of the first.
Okay. And Mick?
In
Carnforth. The one and only.
Carnforth.
Carnforth, UK. And Tony in New York.
Yeah. And I have a couple things I want to add, too.
Okay, and Russ from Salt Lake.
Yep.
How's that?
Okay.
Do you want to go first? Or do you want to go last?
I'll go last.
Or do you want to go in the middle?
I'll go last.
You don't want to go in the middle? We've never done the middle before.
Maybe. We'll see.
Your iPad kind of liked the idea of the middle. It made a little chiming noise.
Yeah, but I don't trust my iPad usually. Okay.
Well, that's probably... That one was your phone. Your phone made the same
that
noise.
That was actually your phone that made that noise.
Oh, see? It's my phone.
It likes my iPad. It has a crush on it.
Well, that's hardly surprising. It is, you know... Okay. I will talk about actual aquarium stuff now.
Okay.
Okay, so Scott. He says, I heard your podcast and Mike from Oregon's question about
Aquaclear
versus BioWheel hang on the back filters. For what it's worth, I've used both and love the Fluval Aquaclear. I get many of the benefits of a canister without the challenging cleanup. You can get a ton of filtration with two Aquaclear 110s for well less than $100.
Thank you, Scott. That was actually supposed to be in the last podcast. He posted
it
in January. But I
missed
it. Because sometimes the Facebook ones, it's harder for me to...
Yeah, sometimes Facebook
catch up on those. It gets confusing for me.
It's not in front of your face.
Yeah, but I do
appreciate...
It's
closed like a book.
I do appreciate Scott's comments.
I'm sorry. I told you. Might just be one of those nights.
Okay.
Well, you guys love me anyways.
I do appreciate Scott's comments, and I think that that is a good way to sum it up there. You do okay. get a lot of the benefits of a canister without the challenging cleanup is a good way to put it, as he did.
Tell me what the benefits of a canister.
Well, one of the things is that you have customizable media. And I think that's part of what he's referring to.
Oh, okay.
Some of the hang-on backs are less customizable, but usually they have media, a series of media baskets or something like that in a canister filter.
And you can
and they have a media basket in an AquaClear that you can put layers in. You know, you stack it up however you want it. So.
Okay. You know what I think?
What?
Context is a funny thing.
Why?
Because media basket. And you could picture, we just went to the library and we got books and DVDs and CDs and they're in a basket. Media basket.
That's because we usually keep our books in a basket from the library so they don't get mixed up with other things. That's
context
true.
Is a funny thing. Okay. Focus, Kelly. Okay, JR from Eastern Kentucky. Says, well, Russ, you inspired me to make a change in my do-it-yourself CO2. A show or two ago, you mentioned that someday you would like to try the citric acid and baking soda method of producing CO2. I had also been giving it some thought, because I was disappointed with the lack of consistency of CO2 output while using the yeast method. I suppose I am a little spoiled, because some years ago I had used pressurized CO2, but don't want to spend the money on going back to a full system at this time. A little history on the tank that will use the new system. I have two 20-gallon long tanks that I run low light with some XL dosing that have done very well and was looking for something to fill a spot against the wall. Back in September of 2014, I picked up a standard 10-gallon tank and set it up with the intent of experimenting with yeast CO2 and high light. Since I am retired, I have plenty of time to waste, so it seemed like the thing to do. Oh, fish tank time is never wasted, right? It's all in the name of science!
Right.
I purchased a Finex planted plus LED light, which easily put me in the high light arena since the tank is so shallow. For gravel, I chose Black Diamond Blasting Sand medium grade. Using the yeast setup in a Tom Barr style internal Venturi reactor. Okay, that phrase should probably be in a paragraph of Technobabble in a movie somewhere.
Okay.
Tom Barr style internal Venturi reactor.
I can see that.
It has a good ring to it, don't you think? Let's put it in the next Avengers movie.
Okay.
Okay. Anyways, a Tom Barr-style internal Venturi reactor. I was getting acceptable results, but not very consistent levels of CO2. I was aiming for 30 to 35 parts per million as measured with pH to KH conversion charts. I was able to achieve these levels, but not without bouncing up and down between 25 to 38 parts per million on any given day. So, after listening to the show, I ordered this system from eBay, and he put a link in to what he ordered.
Right, it's the citric acid and baking soda reactor.
The one that you were talking about?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I set it up yesterday, February 2nd. Within a few minutes of mixing the powders and connecting the hoses, I was able to set my bubble counter at approximately 1.7 BPS. Okay, what's BPS?
Bubbles per second.
I love that there's an abbreviation for bubbles per second.
It's kind of fun, isn't it?
Okay, next time we get, you know, like the bubbles that you blow with a wand outside in the summer, we're going to blow those and we're going to measure those in bubbles per second.
Cool.
Okay.
I'm up for that.
Yeah. By the end of the day, my CO2 level was at approximately 26 parts per million. Using the needle valve on the unit, I increased the level to 2.4 bubbles per second, and I'm measuring around 33 parts per million of CO2. While it's only been a day since I set it up, I am very pleased with the unit's initial performance. Of course, the real test will be to see how consistent it remains and how long the citric acid and baking soda last before they have to be replaced. I will let you know how it goes. Love the podcast. JR from Eastern Kentucky.
Thank you, JR. It's been fun to hear about your experiences with that system, and we look forward to hearing more about it, but So far it sounds promising.
Yeah.
Sounds worth it.
And I learned that there was an abbreviation for bubbles per second.
Yeah.
I love that.
Which I've always thought that was kind of cool too. And now I'm even more, you know, desirous to try that system out someday. Sounds like it's fairly trouble-free and more consistent than yeast. And you will
less
enjoy the fact
stinky.
That it's not going to explode and not going to stink.
Yep.
So.
It's also not going to explode stinkily.
Right.
Okay.
And thank you for joining us, JR.
Mm-hmm. Shall we go to Joe?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, Joe in Heartland, Wisconsin. Says, hello, Russ and Kelly. My name is Joe from Heartland, Wisconsin.
This is his first contribution, welcome, ladies Joe. And gentlemen.
On your last show, Mike from Oregon was asking about Hang on the Backs. You had some great input for Mike. I thought that I could throw a little additional info into the mix. I've had Malawi cichlids for some time and have used several different brands of Hang on the Back. So I made a video just for Mike, but everyone else can watch too, and I put it on my YouTube channel. So here's the link, and we'll put that up for you guys.
Right.
In case that doesn't work, I'm not very familiar with the email link. Oh, okay, yeah. But this channel is WolfDJ21, in case you guys want to look it up that way. But we'll put the video up so everybody can see it.
Yep.
The link.
And
we watched it.
We should be able to put this link up, no problem, on our page.
And you know what he mentioned at least twice in that video?
What?
Surface area!
Yeah, I think, in fact, even more than twice. Mm-hmm. It was several times. It was fun to watch. And
yeah.
I liked the way that he talked about his various filters, showed the various filters as he was talking about them. Mm-hmm. And, you're able to get a different sense while you're looking at what he's talking about. That's nice. So... It's a fun video to watch, and he has some great perspectives on the filters and their particular advantages and disadvantages of several types. So check it out. We will put it on the show page, and we will put a link to it on the Facebook page, too.
Yeah,
so you can watch it from either place. Mm-hmm. Or you can just go to his channel, WolfDJ21, and see it there.
So thanks for making that, Joe. That was very nice.
It was, and I'm sure Mike will appreciate it a lot.
Yeah, it's very cool. Okay, Mick says, hey guys, I just caught up with the latest podcast. I have been working out of town quite a lot over the last couple of weeks, so I haven't had time to get back to you on the joint. Oh, okay. I shouldn't say that part yet.
No, everybody knows we're going to do one.
A surprise.
Everybody knows that we're doing one. They don't know exactly what it's about.
Oh, okay. Well, we're setting up a time.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. Okay. Thinking about Tony's fish room water supply. My friend has had a header tank with a ball. Okay, tell me what that means.
A ball cock is...
plumbed into his loft space.
Plumbed into his loft space. Okay, that's like a... I usually call it a float switch. It has several names, and they are both equally valid terms for it. But it's a float switch, like in a toilet.
Okay. So he's got one of those.
So just for those of you who might not be familiar with what a float switch is, the little float thing that you may have seen in your toilet tank that, as the water level rises,
like
it shuts
rubber
off
ball.
The flow of the water... You know, there's a little floating thing, and sometimes it's a ball, sometimes it's a rectangle, you know, kind of like, or a cube kind of shape. But it doesn't matter. Mm-hmm. The idea is that it's full of air, and as the water level rises in the tank, it lifts up the little bar that it's attached to, which shuts off the flow of the water until the water level drops when it's flushed, and then it starts filling up again.
And then it does it again.
And then the floating action will eventually shut off the water flow.
Okay.
So the toilet doesn't overflow. And that's what he's doing with this tank that's up in his loft. He's making sure that it doesn't overflow.
Okay, so he's got one of those plumbed into his loft space with a gravity-fed tap into the fish room. What's a gravity-fed tap? It's just...
Well, it means that the tap that goes into his fish room, presumably through tubing of some kind or piping of some kind, is powered by the gravity, the fact that it's up in his loft above...
Just water pressure.
It's higher up than his fish room, so the water pressure caused by the fact that it's higher up, yes.
Okay. He has also installed an RO unit off one tap. This way he always has mains or RO as needed. I brought in some of my...
I want to do that. I really want the RO.
I know, you would love that.
Mm, yes, okay, someday.
I brought in some of my grown-on goldfish to the shop recently, a mixture of fancies and around 7 to 8 inches long. I've had so many people asking if I had smaller ones as they're too big for their tanks. When I try to explain that the small ones should be as big as these ones in a few months, I get so many people trying to argue that theirs only grow to the size of the tank they are in. Oy vey. Can I get an oy vey?
Yeah, I don't know how that started. I think maybe it started because people, their goldfish lived for 2 or 3 months at an almost dead level. So they're not doing a whole lot of growing because they're dying. And then they die and they say, oh, our goldfish lived out their natural lifespan of 2 or 3 months and they didn't grow past the size of the container. I don't know. That must be, it must be something like that. It's pretty ridiculous.
You know, I know you can't really do this in a shop. But we could fantasize about getting a jumbo-sized fly swatter. And anytime somebody says that, you just take it down and smack them. I'm so mean. Okay. He says, one customer quite harshly argued that her son has two in a 15-liter tank, and they are doing fine. And this is in quotes from the person. We were going to get some more, but we'll obviously have to go somewhere else.
Oh, that's so sad.
Holy cow.
Yeah.
He says, happily, just as many people are open to the idea of keeping small groups of white clouds and danios in unheated smaller tanks, so there is light at the end of the tunnel. And yay for Mick for being an educator.
Right. It's nice that he's pointing out a valid alternative.
Yeah.
And one of the alternatives, of course, get a bigger tank. But for those who don't have that option, okay, well, here are some smaller fish that will work for you, and they can live out their natural lives much more happily than goldfish would in such a container. Yes. So, yeah, I like that a lot. And white clouds.
White clouds are beautiful.
They're a really beautiful fish, mm-hmm. and when you've just got a few in a small tank, they just really shine. And you can do, you know, you can do them in larger tanks too, but you get a pair or so in a small tank, and they're amazing. Just especially when the males flare their fins. They're really fun. Remember that video you found?
From right after we moved back.
Right after we moved back, and we have that pair of long-finned male white clouds flaring.
Yeah, we should see if we could get that back on the computer and you can put it up.
Yeah, that would be fun.
Format-wise, if it will go back on or not. Might
figure out a way to do it.
Yeah. One day we will come visit Mick's shop, and it will be fun.
That will be fun.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so he says, best fishes and happy herping.
I like that.
Me too. We will keep hoping you get more of the latter kind of people in the shop, Mick.
Right. And we'll look forward to the interview coming up.
Yes, yes. That will hopefully be soon. It's time for that station break thingy when I tell you how you can play an active part in the Aquarimax community. If you want your questions or comments featured on the show, send us an email at info@aquarimax.com or call and leave a message at 801-477-0629. You can also subscribe to the Aquarimax YouTube channel, like our Facebook page, and follow us on Twitter.
And now for a blatant but extremely brief plug.
Our ebook, The Aquarimax Guide to 7 Easy Live Foods, is available on Amazon.com for $2.99. Okay, so Tony says, hello from New York. Here's a little tour for your enjoyment and for the community of my fish room building in progress. Enjoy.
So Tony, yeah, he sent us a video of his fish room as presently constituted.
It's very cool.
It's very cool.
Getting all the plumbing in and everything. It's pretty amazing what he's done.
Yeah, we got two great videos.
And going back to Mick's email, he is using those float switches.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, he is. I want to set up something like that someday. That would be really cool.
That would be cool.
I love how everything's automated. All the water changes and the draining and everything are all going to be automated.
I have a question.
Yeah.
And maybe this is something that I won't get right now.
Okay.
But he mentions in the video that if you're automatically changing the water at a slow drip, for a 20-gallon water change, you don't actually end up changing 20 gallons of water.
Right.
How does that work?
Well, basically, if you change it with a python, you pull out all the water that you're going to pull out. 100% of the water that you're going to pull out, you pull out. And then you put in 100% of the water that you're going to put back in.
Okay.
Right? Because you take it all out first and then you add it. There are two discrete steps.
Okay.
When you do the slow water change, basically what you're doing is displacing water that's already in the tank. And when you displace it, it leaves the tank. So as you add water to the tank, water is pushed out of the tank.
But if you eventually displace 20 gallons of water, shouldn't it push out 20 gallons of water?
Yes, but though some of the water you push out is going to be the water you just put in.
Because it's going so slowly.
Yeah. Because okay. One drop goes in this side of the tank and swirls around, mm-hmm. and you know a certain number of the molecules are going to end up on the far side of the tank, and some of them are going to be over here still, and blah, blah, blah. And so, you see what I'm saying? So then a drop goes out, but some proportion of that drop, statistically speaking, is likely going to be some of the water you just put in. Because it drops in over here on this side, gets all mixed into the aquarium, and then that drop goes out and some of it is going to be water you just put in.
But at a certain point, the tank only holds so much water. So you can't keep putting 20 gallons in and only taking 18 gallons out.
Well, you're still getting 20 gallons of water out, but some of that 20 gallon is made up of water you just put in,
essentially. So they're saying it's not staying in long enough to be considered replaced.
Sort of, yeah. You're not really replacing all old water with all new water, because you're replacing some of the old water with the new water and some of it with the, you know. You're losing 18 gallons of your old water and 2 gallons of the new water you just put in. Sort of.
Okay.
By the time 20 gallons have actually gone out.
I probably get that as well as I'm going to get that right now.
Okay.
Okay. I'm going to say a little side note. Mm-hmm. Maybe this is weird. But I'm glad that Tony called the toilet the commode. That's a great name for it.
It is.
And it's not very many people use it.
It's one that your dad uses a lot.
Yeah, so. My dad uses it a lot. I personally tend to call the bathroom the necessary.
Yes, but it was fun.
Also a good one.
And I did enjoy the fact that Tony pointed out that the toilet, it can be used for its normal functions as well.
Yes, that's good.
His water draining system did not compromise that at all, which is cool.
I think it's shaping up to be pretty cool.
It is, and I love the system that you got set up, and I want to do something like that someday. It just makes everything so easy once it's done. I know you put a lot of work into it now, but the fact that you put all the work in, you're putting all of this work in now, means you're just going to be able to enjoy the fruits of your labors later with so much less effort.
And it will be really cool.
Yeah, and it's going to make it easier for other people.
And you can make us a yoga video.
That's looming on the horizon. I'm afraid there's no escaping that, because you're almost done.
Well, I know.
Well, you're coming along anyway. It's coming along very nicely.
Tony has a PS.
Okay.
He says, Mick, indoor fish rooms are the best, but I do wonder what you're going to do with your fish room in the shed. It would be a shame to let it go to waste. My humble suggestion, a second fish room. Maybe for cold water species. Can't wait to hear more about your build in progress, too.
Yeah, that'll be fun to see how that is coming along as well. All right, well, thanks to all our aquariumexers. I do want to point out a couple of things. A project
yes, you were going to talk about some things.
I've been working on.
And we didn't talk about it in the middle, so now we have to talk about it at the end.
I could always edit and make it seem like we put it in the middle, but now that I've talked about it, I can't.
That would hardly be the same thing, wouldn't it?
And plus, I don't like to do that kind of editing. It takes forever for one. Mm-hmm. Okay, so the project I've been working on lately is 2 more Opaiula tanks. And let me explain what that is. For those of you who may not know, I think it was about 207 episodes ago, a long time ago, we did an episode.
Did you just say 207 episodes ago?
I did.
That's a funny phrase.
Is it? Okay. Yeah. Because it was episode 31 and we're on 238 now, right? Mm-hmm. So, yeah. About 207 episodes ago, we did an episode entirely on Opaiula.
We did.
It was episode 31, yeah.
Probably redo it.
Maybe we should. I've had Opaiula since about 2005, I think. So about 10 years.
Mm-hmm.
Now, those of you who may not know what those are, because you haven't been listening to Aquariumex that long, they are a species of brackish water shrimp native to Hawaii. In fact, endemic to Hawaii. They're only found there. In special pools called anchialine pools, which are very interestingly connected to the ocean underground, and the rainwater that seeps through the porous, you know, ground rock, mixes, the rainwater mixes with the seawater, and so you get these brackish water pools that have a kind of a tidal connection, so they fluctuate with the tides, not as much as the ocean does, but they do fluctuate some. And anyway, these shrimp live in this very unique environment, underground in the hypogeal environment, and above ground in the epigeal environment, the pool that you actually see. They live there, and while we lived in Hawaii, I got some. Brought home about 40 of them from Hawaii. And over the years, they've reproduced quite a bit. So I've had a couple, I don't know, maybe 300 or so shrimp on that time. And I've sold probably close to 100 of them. So I now have maybe 150 or 200. I don't know exactly how many I have. But I have quite a few. And they're doing well. But right now, I have them in two different setups. I have a 3-gallon setup that is in our house, on our landing, in fact, on a little table that my sister made, especially for the
tank. Looks very pretty.
And I've got a 2-gallon setup at work. And the thing is, we used to have the 3-gallon at home near a window where it didn't really get any direct sunlight, but it got bright indirect light for a large part of the day. So the shrimp looked bright red, and it was fun to watch them, and so on.
The one that we made the shrimp surfing video in.
Oh, I think it was actually a different one.
No, well, it was on that same...
But it was in that same area.
That same little shelf thing.
Yeah, it was on the same little shelf, yes. It was. Just a different tank. Mm-hmm. But, anyway, these opiola, they're fun to watch. They're very interesting, unique little creatures. They only get to be about a centimeter long, so they stay quite small. And they're bright, bright red when they're happy and healthy and in bright light. Okay, so if they go into the dark, they lose their color, but then they'll get it back when they're in the bright light. But in this apartment, we've noticed where we are now, they don't have as much light where they are, and so they're never really super red. There are some that are kind of red when the light's on, but they don't get the light as bright as they should. So even though they're doing very well, they don't get bright because they don't get bright red because they don't get bright light. So we're just thinking, what could we do about that? And the other day, I decided, I'm going to do some moving around of things and move some critters here and there. And I'm going to set up two tanks at work because I have a double-tiered stand. One, the top can hold 10 gallons, the bottom can hold a 5.5 gallon, and I have a 10-gallon and 5-gallon there. So I moved some things around, and I ended up going to a place called American Stone, which is pretty close to our house.
It's one of those landscaping rock
place. A place that specializes in landscape rock. That's what they sell. They actually had a nice koi pond with turtles in it, too. So it had koi and radiator slider turtle, an indoor pond that was like bigger than our bedroom and had all these things going on, and it was really cool. But the lava rock there and the lace rock there were quite well priced. The lace rock, which you buy at an aquarium store, you know, it might be $3 a pound, $4 a pound, whatever. It's 40 cents a pound.
It's pretty good.
And you can sort through it and pick what you want. So it's great. The lava rock, the black lava rock, the stuff that I looked at Home Depot and could not find, because they don't sell it, apparently, in my state. They don't sell it here. What do you think?
The Home Depot people don't sell it.
This place, American Stone, has it for... guess how much?
I don't remember.
8 cents a pound.
8 cents a pound.
And the pieces of lava rock vary in size quite a bit. But the larger ones are probably the size of a tennis ball. And they go down much smaller than that to probably about cherry size. But most of them are somewhere between those two sizes. On the larger side, you know, bigger than a chicken egg. Mm-hmm. And I collected a whole bunch of them. And he weighed all the rock. So I got some lace rock and I got some lava rock. He weighed it all on the scale they had out there. And he said, that's going to come to like $3 and some change. So I just thought, wow, this is great because, you know, that's, it costs
really
about,
cheap.
Yeah, it's really cheap, and it's also the size I wanted, you know, the size range that I wanted for the pieces I wanted. And if I were to go to Home Depot, I couldn't even find it, and I could get the red lava, which I don't want for red shrimp, because I don't want them to disappear on it.
Right.
But that would cost $350 for pieces that are not of an ideal size.
So it was a really good deal.
A really super good deal, and I'm happy about it. And then I went to the pet store, and I picked up some Malaysian trumpet snails, which they're resistant to brackish water. They do quite well in it. And I started acclimating those, and they're doing fine. I've set up the 5.5 gallons so far. Haven't put any shrimp in it because I need to let it, settle and so on. But I did put the Malaysian trumpet snails in there because they'll be fine. And I put a layer of aragonite sand, which is usually used for marine aquariums. It's calcium buffer and so on. Put a thin layer of that on the bottom, and I put the lava rock over that and added the brackish water, and it's about 4 parts fresh to 1 part salt right now. I'll probably tweak that a little bit. And the tanks are both illuminated, and we're going to see how that goes. But these shrimp breed pretty well, and they have bred for me pretty well right now. I have at least 3 females that are carrying eggs at the moment. They're not as prolific as, say, red cherry shrimp, but they do breed once you get them going. And I'm figuring that in the 10-gallon, I could probably have at least 500 shrimp doing well in there at some point once they, you know, get reproducing there. And then the 5-gallon, at least a couple hundred shrimp. Since in the 3-gallon I have probably between 150 to 200 shrimp right now. Yeah. So, looking forward to it. One of the tanks is going to be filtered. One of them is not, because the shrimp do well in non-filtered tanks, but I wanted to see the difference, and it's just very lightly filtered, and wanted to see how that might affect things. And looking forward to seeing how that goes. So I'll keep you updated on my latest project, my Opaiula tanks. And thank you to all of our contributors. Everybody, please remember to check out the videos that Joe in Heartland, Wisconsin, and Tony in New York have been so kind to provide us with. May the fish be with you.
May the fish be with you.
Thank you for listening to this edition of the Aquarimax Audio Show. For additional episodes, please visit aquarimax.com. To leave comments or questions that could be featured on an upcoming podcast, leave a message at 801-477-0629 or email us at info@aquarimax.com.